This is Logan Sekula with breaking news. The United States to sanction Cuban officials.
Live from Washington, D.C., Sekula Live.
We call on the government, of Cuba, to refrain from violence. There are attempts to silence the voice of the people of Cuba.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Dozens of people have been reportedly arrested in the protests, including journalists. Many demonstrators were also injured in clashes with police and pro-government activists.
And now your host, Logan Sekula.
This is Logan Sekula joining you also, Will Haynes, Wes Smith, and Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. There's breaking news and a report that you're not seeing a ton going out on right now. So if you're watching mainstream news, you may have not seen it because, again, sometimes these things just get out of the news. But there are reports right now that the Biden administration, the U.S., is going to sanction Cuba officials following the attacks on the protesters. This is all coming out right now. I believe it's a report we have in front of me from the Washington Post saying that the Biden administration will announce new sanctions today against a number of Cuban officials deemed directly involved in human rights abuses during a government crackdown on widespread protests earlier this month, a senior administration official said. So the big question, Will, on this, and obviously for Than and for Wes, and we have a great new piece we'll discuss that Wes just wrote. Is this too little, too late? Is it 2 weeks later? And now this is where we get to a point where you're making a sort of, well, we're sanctioning, what are you sanctioning? Specific people who may have had, and what does that even mean?
So what we're hearing from this report, which, as you pointed out, Washington Post was the first to break. Now it's starting to find its way into other media sources that they're going to impose these sanctions on specific small number of individuals from Cuba's interior ministry and military forces. So the question is, how small of a number is it? Is it not a proportional response to their crackdown on what was the largest and really the first mass protest in about 60 years in Cuba? So we're going to see how this plays out. And there are a lot of details that are going to start coming out throughout the day. But there's also been reports that he's going to seek measures to help restore internet to Cuba and things that we had been talking about earlier in this week. So a lot more details are going to start coming out today. We're going to stay on top of it, but we need to see how this plays out before we completely judge these actions.
Yeah, I want to go to Than. Than in D.C., has the Cuban whole situation that's unfolded the last few weeks of what's happening in Cuba, has it really taken a hold of Washington, D.C.? Does the reaction seem proportionate to you?
Well, I think, like Will said, I think it's going to depend on what the details are here. I do think it's too late, Logan. I mean, I think it was apparent days ago that action was needed by the Biden administration. I would tell you, just sort of on a top level, I think it's good that there is movement coming out of this. But I would ask the secondary questions. I would go even maybe a little bit further than Will did. I think the sanctions are an acknowledgement that more is needed from the United States. And I would say on two fronts. I mean, I think it's ironclad proof that the administration needs to do things tangible to stand with the demonstrators. We've talked before about getting the internet turned on. I think that is something that should be at the very top of the list. And then second, Logan, I think it's ironclad proof that people that are fleeing Cuba coming to the United States probably have about the best asylum claim that there is, and yet this administration has said they're not going to consider it. So look, I think it's good news. I don't know how good. We'll have to see the details, but it's proof movement that some of these secondary actions are needed.
Yes, it's movement. It shows when people stand up and they react that, you know, answers are at least given somewhat. Hey, we're taking your phone calls. I want to hear from you. They're lighting up right now, but we have a few lines open, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to talk about in the next segment. Wes Smith is here. He's a brand new blog that just went up on our website minutes ago called Cuba and the Cry for Freedom. We're going to discuss that, what that looks like, and why you should go to our website. Obviously, take a look and read that. Heck, you can do it during the break if you want to. That's at ACLJ.org. We can also donate because it's part of our matching challenge right now through the month of July, which means effectively any donation that you give, there's someone on the other end matching that donation. So if someone gives $10, there's a person on the other end matching that $10, so on and so on, into the thousands. So we appreciate your support. Hey, if you're watching on social media, share right now. Share on Facebook. Like if you're on, hey, someone took a picture, I think. But share on Facebook. Like, repost, retweet, get the word out there. Thumbs up. Do everything you need to do to get the word out there about this breaking news that's happening right now as the U.S. finally responds to the situation happening in Cuba. We'll be right back with more on Sekula.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Seculo. Phone lines are open at 1-800-684-3110. I did want to discuss currently what's going on, and that is there's reports out this morning that the Biden administration is going to sanction Cuban officials following, they put in Washington Post, following the attack on protesters. So it's a bit nuanced, a bit specific, but we're going to see what that is. But beyond that, and the whole discussion of Cuba, there's a brand new blog on our website called Cuba and the Cry for Freedom, and Wes Smith, who wrote that blog, is sitting here right next to us. Give us a little bit of a rundown of what this is and why people should go take a look at it.
Yeah. You know, this is a rare opportunity, both for the Cuban people and for the United States of America. The Cuban people, unlike other countries in Latin America, they have never demonstrated. They've never come out in mass demonstrations demanding freedom. Part of the reason for this is that the other countries in Latin America have been, you know, somewhat free, somewhat democratic, and then over the last 10, 15 years have gradually become authoritarian kind of governments of the people. So they, them protesting, they remember what democracy is like. Most of the Cuban people have lived under the Castro regime all of their lives. For them to say enough is enough and to come out in mass demonstrations to risk torture, imprisonment, even being executed to do that, is an unprecedented thing, and that's part of what's going on here. And we're talking about the president and these new sanctions. My problem, much like Than's, with what President Biden has done, is that his response thus far has been tepid and very measured. This is not the time to be tepid and measured. He needs to be, you know, unequivocal in his support of the people who are demanding freedom in Cuba. And part of that equivocation that I see, the hesitation on the president's part, is that he has not expressly countered the contentions by people like Bernie Sanders and AOC and others in the last 2 weeks who have actually come out in support of the Cuban regime, saying that it's one of the most equitable and fair countries in the Western Hemisphere, which is a blatant lie. They brag on the Cuban regime. You know, when people who are part of the Democrat Party do that kind of thing, the president needs to come out and flat out reject those kinds of contentions and arguments. And thus far, he's not done that.
Yeah, one of my biggest issues with this specific case and what's happening in Cuba is obviously as Americans, as Christians, as conservatives, you want to react. You want to be able to do something. You want to get involved. But even just as Americans, you'd think you'd want to get involved because of what's happening, like you said, 90 miles off the coast. When there is a very lack of freedom, he said they've never taken to the streets. This is a moment of action. And much like everything, maybe I could pitch this to Than, much like everything, it feels like in Washington. Everything gets through a Washington, D.C. filter now. So there's no longer just an American feeling of, okay, we definitely all need to be behind the Cuban people, support what's going on, and at least promote. We're not even if we don't know how necessarily, we know that there is a good and a bad side to this. But everything, really in the last 8 years, 6 years, has become so divided that even on a specific instance like this, where there is clearly, I feel like, a good and a bad, it can't be that way. It has to be a divided political, you know, issue.
I really couldn't agree with you more, Logan. And look, there's a government response and there's an individual response. Maybe just a word on both. On the government response, Wes is correct. It's become very in vogue in Washington, D.C. to blame the United States for what is happening in Cuba. Logan, we got to be very clear. The human rights abuses and the oppression that's happening in Cuba is the fault of the Cuban regime. Plain and simple, it's not the fault of the United States. And there's a lot of talk about the embargo. Marco Rubio said this. He said, I would say most of the people that give opinions don't even know what the embargo is or how it works. There's only two embargoes here. The embargo that the United States has against government-owned companies, which, Logan, I would tell you that's appropriate, and then the embargo that the Cuban regime imposes on its own people. And then, Logan, maybe just a word on the individual response, especially as believers. We're called to seek justice and love mercy. Seek justice means cracking down against oppressive regimes that are harming their own people. And of course, it goes hand in hand with loving mercy and extending a hand of help to those who are fleeing and seeking freedom. Logan, that goes back to the asylum point we've made so many times. This is why we have asylum laws in the United States of America. We should use them.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about this a bit in our prep meeting. That I don't know if a lot of our audience, a lot of people know, sort of the presence of the U.S. in Cuba, that there is an embassy, that we are working towards different things in Cuba continually, because we hear mainly about the embargo. We mainly hear about the fact that, you know, we're cut off. We can't really have, you know, there's been some loosening with some cruise lines over the last few years, and it feels like that's an on and off again relationship. But we do have a government presence in Cuba.
Yeah, the embassy's there. Of course, there's an investigation, as we talked about in the pre-radio meeting, about, you know, this sonic weapons, perhaps, that have been used against our staff people in Havana, what they call the Havana Syndrome. But we do have a presence there. Although, part of my issue with President Biden, you know, we've said on this broadcast, and it's true, that the Biden administration is really Obama 2.0. When it comes to being pro-abortion, when it comes to the Iran nuclear deal, anti-law enforcement, open borders, it is like the Obama administration has come back to visit us. And in light of that, I wonder about President Biden's deep convictions about Cuba, because it was President Obama, and he was the vice president, who really went to Cuba, went to a ball game, befriended Raul Castro,
right.
You know, tried to ignore all of the oppressive abuses that are going on down there. President Obama, with that presidential visit, gave the Cuban regime legitimacy, and President Biden needs to flat out reject any legitimacy of this regime, and all of the abuses and the oppression and the torture, the executions, all of the things that have been going on for the last 100 years are basically with socialist and communist governments, of which Cuba is example number one.
Well, and also one of the problems we had earlier in the week was that there wasn't really a response from the administration. And while we think that the tools such as sanctions can be a good thing for our government to use, that's a part of the tool set that a government has to affect change in different countries in different ways without having to even use military might or something of that nature. But what we saw here was a very tepid, almost non-existent response from the Biden administration, and almost like they were trying to placate to the left of their party. But at the same time, now, 2 weeks after these protests and demonstrations started, they're announcing this. And there was a political operative that was quoted in Politico that said it's huge because no administration has ever announced they will hold individuals who violate human rights on the island of Cuba accountable. They've just done the blanket embargo. That's a good thing, right? They're showing some strength. But the converse of that is that their language and rhetoric don't really line up. Why didn't they announce immediately, we're looking at who we're going to go after to put it into these human rights abuses?
Also, what do these sanctions mean when we're not necessarily actively you know, working with them? You know, is it just in name only to have these sanctions, or is there, are there real consequences?
Yeah, the president has the bully pulpit, and that's been the disappointment for me. He should have been making strong statements on a daily basis in support of the Cuban people, and he's not done that. I think, to Will's point, I think he does want to placate the leftists in the Democratic Party who tend to be pro-Cuban regime, pro-socialist, and things like that. But here's the thing. The president needs to be willing to take a political risk on principle, because the people in the streets of Cuba are taking real physical risk for their cries for freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I want you to give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, with your thoughts on the situation in Cuba and the breaking news that there will be some sanctions of Cuban officials. And I want to hear from you and your thoughts, 1-800-684-3110. I believe Rick Grinnell is going to be joining us in the next segment. He has a lot to say about Cuba. In fact, he's a person who brought my attention to this as we head to break. This is someone you would maybe not expect. Maybe you thought the Biden administration would say something similar to this, but no, we have to go to our entertainers and those who really are passionate. Here is Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull. This is Bite 31 on his thoughts about Cuba. Maybe, you know, there should be a revolution there. Let's go 31.
Let me tell you something, why I'm frustrated and when I see everybody out there and doing what they're doing, which I love what they're doing. Okay, because not only do we live for freedom, we ride for freedom, we die for freedom, but we appreciate freedom. And it gets me hot, it bothers me, and it frustrates me to a certain extent, being a Cuban American and having a platform to speak to the world and not being able to help my own people. Not being able to get them food, not being able to get them water, not being able to get them medicine. But most of all, not being able to help and really get them what they deserve, which is freedom.
Yeah, so that's just a small clip of the statement from, again, from our entertainers, of making stronger statements than what's coming out of the White House. That's from Pitbull. You can find his whole statement on Twitter. I will tell you, we had to edit some of that for language, obviously. There is some choice words, but understandably, it's a frustrating time. I can imagine being someone who is sort of the king of Miami, if you will, would be someone who is very passionate about this. And I think it's interesting to hear that there are those people calling for humanitarian aid, those people that are calling for actual response. But then this, we get some, you know, a couple weeks later, you get some sanctions, and that's nice, and it is what it is. I want to hear your thoughts. Who else needs to stand up? How can we help? That's something we're all trying to figure out. I know that's a discussion point we're having. Again, I want to encourage you to check out our website, because there is that brand new blog that Wes posted. It is available right now, and is specifically about Cuba and the cry for freedom. It's available on our front page right now. You can find it right under the live broadcast. You can also make your donation today to the ACLJ as we continue to fight for you and fight for people worldwide, not just here in America. We want to make sure that we can help where we can, and your support keeps not only the show going, but hundreds of people out in the field, lawyers, legal staff, video production, audio, everything you see, everything you hear, and trust me, plenty you'll never see, because we are out there fighting for you, the American people, and the people around the world. ACLJ.org, we'll be back with Rick Grinnell.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Seculo. Again, this is Logan Seculo in studio here, Than Bennett's Washington, D.C., Will Haynes, Wes Smith. We are joined by former acting DNI, Rick Grinnell. Obviously, you know him as the Senior Advisor for National Security and Foreign Policy. Rick, we'll be talking about Cuba this week quite a bit. This morning, you know, there are reports out there that the Biden administration may sanction or is going to be sanctioning some Cuban officials. We're kind of under the conversation of, well, that's good. There's things happening. But I want to get your point of view as someone who has served in these kind of situations before. What that actually means? Is it too little, too late? Does this do anything when you're sanctioning people from Cuba, Cuban officials?
I don't know why they're so slow at the White House. I mean, let's be honest. The State Department sanctioned conservatives in Albania. They moved quickly to sanction people in the Balkans and Eastern Europe. But yet, when it comes to Cuba, which is really right on our shores, and we know the country well, and we know their habits well, and we know the communist regime that controls that country well, I don't understand why, when people are in the streets and they're getting attacked, that our government doesn't act faster. We've got to be able to be timely with the sanctions. Otherwise, they just don't work.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's this coming out. We're going to keep people updated. Obviously, we're happy that there are things moving forward. It's just, again, the conversation of what it means. And we just played a clip, Rick. I think you shared it originally, one of the reasons I saw it, from Pitbull, from Mr. Worldwide, the former Pitbull, making a much stronger declarative statement than you hear from the White House. In fact, we're turning to our entertainers who feel more passionate and more maybe in tune to what's going on. And that seems like a sad state of affairs.
I jokingly said that I think Pitbull should be the national security advisor. Yeah. He's doing a better job than Jake Sullivan. Look, I think that this is wrapped in politics, let's be honest. Yeah. The Biden administration and the Democrats have been losing Florida for a very long time. But what I think they miss is that somehow Cuba, over the past years, has become more than just a South Florida issue. It's really an issue for any American who loves freedom and liberty. And they see what's happening right close to our shores. And I would put Iran in the same boat when we saw in 2009 the Green Revolution, where the Iranian people took to the streets. And they were trying to petition their government, and the regime there in Iran pushed back with violence. The Obama-Biden team was very slow. As a matter of fact, have been criticized for maybe missing that moment. And I think that now what we're seeing with Biden and Susan Rice, who clearly is more in charge than she pretends to be, I think they are once again missing this moment in Cuba.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's sad. And it's also unfortunate. We talked about this a little bit earlier, that this, like you said, it's all politics. But at what point do you not read the room and see, for the American people, this is not politics anymore? There is a clear good and bad here.
Yeah, Logan, look, I think that they should just look no further than the cities across America.
Right.
That over the last week have had demonstrations. And again, these are cities outside of Florida. This is no longer a Florida issue. I know the Democrats feel like they've lost Florida. Yeah. So why take up Florida issues? But they need to recognize that this is no longer just a South Florida issue. And people in America want to see what Ronald Reagan talked about, which was that city on a hill, the beacon for human rights. And we should always, whether it's China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, wherever it is, we should stand for human rights.
Absolutely.
Rick, there's also some reports out that the Biden administration is considering maybe increasing embassy staff in Cuba. That would be under the reopened embassy under the Obama administration. And there's, I guess my question for you is, there's obviously there's good things that diplomatic relations can do. But when you, in the middle of this, signal that you may increase something like embassy staff, does that potentially give more legitimacy to a authoritarian regime?
It's a good question. I think we certainly have to look at it. I'm a big advocate for having fewer people in European capitals in our embassies and more foreign service officers, more individuals representing the United States in places where there are serious frontline diplomacy to do. And, you know, Condi Rice, many years ago when she was Secretary of State, tried to push the Foreign Service to take danger posts and to go into embassies where there were serious diplomatic endeavors to undertake. And her point was, this is why you joined the Foreign Service. It's the Foreign Service, after all. And yet there was a big pushback from people saying, oh, I think it's too dangerous, or I'd rather be in a European capital. Well, of course, they'd like to be in Paris, London, sure, or Berlin. But at the end of the day, I think that the State Department needs a transformation, and we need to be able to have a cone of people, and that's what they call their you know, sector that they pursue, that we need to have a cone of diplomats who are willing to go immediately in situations like Cuba and try to do diplomatic things. We can't always just fall back on military presence, U.S. boots on the ground.
Wes. Hey, Rick, I'm curious, too. You know, if you were in charge for the day, we've talked about on the show, you know, that we need to figure out, because we have Guantanamo Bay there, trying to get the internet back on and support the Cuban people, you know, publicly condemn the regime. But on a practical step-by-step basis, if you were in charge of responding on behalf of the administration to what's going on in Cuba, what are the specific steps you would want to consider to do things to actually make a difference?
Well, let me just talk about an issue that I have long thought would help not only the people of Cuba, but the people who are freedom loving inside China and who are yearning to be free, and maybe include Iran and some other places, Saudi Arabia. But we have the technology in the United States to bring down all the government blockers that block access to the information that people need to understand what's going on. Perfect information is what some grad students would call it. We need to be able to provide that access to the information. And the United States should be unapologetic about using technology to bring down government blockers, to give people access to the internet. By the way, I really believe that this is a part of the America First agenda, because Americans want to help other countries, and certainly we can help by paying for this technology. But at the end of the day, the American people have been very clear. We don't want to send boots, U.S. boots, on the ground to other countries when they should be stepping up and fighting for their freedom. We send our military troops when our national security is threatened, and only when our national security is threatened, to defend America. But we also have to be that beacon on a hill that's helping other countries and people who are yearning for more freedom. We absolutely have that responsibility, but I think it's in a different way than what we traditionally have looked at.
Yes, absolutely, Rick. I think that's a good point. I mean, it's historically something we've kind of done before. We've seen before with radio waves, radio free, Europe, you hear all those different things that happened. Why not? Why not use the technology to our advantage? Thank you, Rick, for joining us. Maybe that's something we can look into a little bit more here at the ACLJ and see what work we can do to help the people all around the world. Hey, take a look at ACLJ.org. We're coming back with another half hour. Great new content, including that new blog by Wes Smith about Cuba. You can find that on the front page. And again, any donation you make is doubled right now because of our matching challenge. So if you give $10, there's someone on the other end matching that $10, $20, $30. You know how it goes. We'll be right back with more on Seculo.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Seculo Live. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. We're talking about the breaking news coming out of Washington, D.C., that the Biden administration is going to be sanctioning some Cuban officials later today following the protests and the treatment of the protesters that happened in the streets of Cuba and eventually affected the United States, became protests around the country. Now, there are some phone calls that are coming in right now. I'd like to hear from you, 1-800-684-3110. A question I have for you. What would you like to see? What do you think the response can be to Cuba? Do you think we need to be getting involved at all? Do you think we need to be helping people out? Do you think they should be able to seek asylum, like we believe, seek asylum here in the United States because of the egregious issues that are happening and the lack of freedom in their own country just 90 miles off our shore? What do you think? 1-800-684-3110. I'd love to hear from you. And in the next segment, we'll take as many calls as we can. Okay, so give us a phone call. 1-800-684-3110. But let's get to some calls. Mary Ellen's calling from Illinois. Mary Ellen, welcome.
Oh, hello. How are everyone?
Great.
Appreciate this topic very much. But I had a question, which I have 2 points that I had heard that I thought I'd pass on and ask for your military or perspective on this matter, you know, given history of different sure. revolutions. The first thing I had heard was over the weekend that the military was giving some of their weapons to the protesters. And then the other thing I heard was, and this was from a family member from in our country who had some communication with their relatives over there, and that the military was conscripting young boys, which kind of gave me the idea maybe the top people there think the military is crumbling. So I'd throw that out to you all.
Yeah, Mary Ellen, that's an interesting point. I'm not sure if we have specific answers to those questions, but the Cuban military is very much a thing. And you can honestly, if you followed any of these stories, it is something that's kind of indoctrinated early on, it seems like, for kids to get involved. Obviously, it's been 70 years since the revolution. As you said, Wes, most kids have grown up in it. They don't really know better. And they only know better because maybe the limited access to what's happening around the world. They understand now when the cruise lines come in, wait a second, these are the people who we've not been able to work with. And look what they're doing for our nation.
Well, when the Cuban people get a look at the outside world and what's right. really going on and not just the misinformation from the regime, that makes a difference too. I'm sure there's unrest in the Cuban military because they have family members who suffer. Yeah. The Cuban military is not paid handsomely. And so there's probably some unrest there, you know, to be sure. But I think that, as you said, the military and the police are the ones that are cracking down on the demonstrators. What I find also interesting, though, in the propaganda realm is that the government has been staging pro-regime rallies. But at these rallies, there are people that are made to go and hold banners. Those are any government employee, any off-duty military person. These people are required to show up at a pro-government rally, which doesn't say much about the confidence that the government has that the actual man or woman on the street really supports what they're doing.
And that's a tactic you see oftentimes in these communist regimes. You think of North Korea and the large military parades. Many times these revolutionary governments have almost all of them have forced military service for a certain age of the population. And when you think about what you're talking about there with sending out the counter-protesters at their government employees, that's not a, hey, go do this just to show how much you love the government. It's at many times because they're threatened or they know that if they don't do it, their livelihood's at stake.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yep, we're going to be taking more calls and comments coming up in the next segment. So if you have a call or you have a comment, I could appreciate it right now. Throw your comment in on the chat on Facebook or on YouTube. Or if you are listening right now, or if you're watching, you just say, hey, I'd rather hear it directly from you guys. I'd love to hear your voice on the air. 1-800-684-3110. Call in with your questions or your feedback. What you would do. What would you like to see? How would you like to see America respond to the hopeful, inevitable, we can hope inevitable, revolution that may happen again in Cuba? Give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Check out all the great content we have on social media. We'll be right back again. Make sure you check out that website. Make sure you're liking, you're subscribing, and you're sharing. And we'll be right back.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
To Seculo. I want to play a couple different things to kind of show you the converse reaction of what Washington says and what the American people are saying through some of our entertainers and through some of our other people who are actually passionate and care about what's going on in the world. Maybe one of them I would prefer to have been the president. Let's go first to President Joe Biden, Byte 24. This is specifically about what he responded to when he said when the protests were happening, or this was just a couple days ago, he said this. Here is what he called for. This is Byte 24, Joe Biden.
We call on the government of Cuba to refrain from violence. There are attempts to silence the voice of the people of Cuba.
Yeah, so he wants to make sure that we call on the government of Cuba to refrain from violence. To silence the people. Doesn't call for change, Will, as you brought up.
Right. Yeah, you would hope that maybe he'd call on the government of Cuba to change their oppressive regime, or maybe actually allow freedom on their country, or call for the internet to be opened up.
Yeah.
But instead, he's just like, okay, let's keep the status quo. Just could you back off on the violence angle, please?
Yeah, and then on the converse, we have Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide, a Cuban-American from Miami. You've seen him. I know you love him. He made a great statement. So we just heard from Joe Biden, who said, you know, we hope the government just, you know, doesn't hurt their people. That's what we're hoping for. We're calling for the government to refrain from violence against their own people. But then here's what Pitbull has to say, Byte 33.
So to everybody out there, stand up, step up. And if you don't understand, get with the program and wake up. Because this is about freedom and it's about human rights. And to everybody in Cuba, keep the fight up.
Yeah, then he goes into a moment in Spanish. That is a declarative statement, something that sounds like should be coming from our government, but it's coming from our entertainers. It's coming from Pitbull, because as Rick said, this is an issue people who are from South Florida have been dealing with. It's gone beyond South Florida, but if you are from that area of the world, you've been dealing with this your whole life.
Yeah, I mean, I wish the president would listen to Pitbull use some of that same rhetoric. You know, for the president to talk about, you know, the government, you know, not being violent and to let the people have freedom of speech. Here's a newsflash to Mr. President. There is no right of free speech on the island of Cuba.
Right.
It does not exist. And then Bernie Sanders says, you know, his hope is that the Cuban government will tolerate, that's the word he used, tolerate the demonstrators. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's the best you can do. Of course, he is a socialist and Cuba's a socialist nation. But he
wants the best hope is no violence. Or no violence against your own people.
Yeah.
And tolerance. Yeah. Again, change.
And respect their right to free speech, which, by the way, they don't have.
Another problem with this is that because of the slow reaction from the administration, they've ended up having to play defense from members of their own party who are saying, you know, the real problem is the United States because of the embargo, that people like AOC and Bernie Sanders are blaming the United States on the problems of the Cuban people, not the oppressive communist regime. And so much so that Jen Psaki had to respond to those statements about, what are your thoughts on AOC saying that it's the embargo with Bite 25.
These are protests inspired by the harsh reality of everyday life in Cuba, not people in another country.
So she's having to say it's not another country's fault. It's not
to separate
a little. It's because it's what the harsh everyday realities in Cuba. But they aren't strong with their language calling out what's going on.
All right, let's go to calls. Let's go to Richard, who's calling in California on line one. Richard, we'll get to you in 1 second. Give me a call, though, if you want to be on the air. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. You get about 5 minutes before we have to cut off all calls for the day. So I want to hear from you. Let's go to Richard in California. Line one, you're on the air.
Hey, God bless ACLJ.
Thank you.
You know, it's pretty frustrating because we don't learn from the past. You know, talk is cheap, and the Indians used to say that the government speaks with forked tongue. You know, we've missed so many opportunities to help these countries, and we just sit back with our hands in our pocket and don't do anything. Well, you know what? Why would this country, this administration, the United States, want to change anything in Cuba when they're trying to do the same thing here in this country? It's all about control. Why would anybody want to say anything about human rights in China when we got a lot of the people that are in the administration in bed with them? I mean,
I understand, Richard, the frustration. And look, I don't necessarily disagree with a lot of your frustrations. The problem is we can't just say, well, it is what it is. We live in a very divided nation, and Than, as you know, Washington, D.C., like I said, we live in a very divided nation, but that doesn't mean we have to just give up because we know, oh, there's a lot of people who are just fighting for their own political agenda.
Well, there's a lot that can be done with it. As the superpower of the world, Logan, there's so much that we can do to stand for freedom in Cuba. Look, I think Richard's correct on the point that the left in Washington, D.C., there's a portion of them that are blaming the United States. There's also a portion that would like our policies to be more similar. So that is probably fair. But, you know, Logan, the thing that I would really like to see the Biden administration do on this point is actually speak with force to international powers here. I mean, specifically Russia. Senator Rubio and others have talked about this. What is the United States going to do when Russia and troops show up in Cuba to back the regime? What are they doing right now, Logan, to make sure that doesn't happen? We talked a lot with Ambassador Grinnell about how the delay in the response was actually the harm here. Logan, if 2 weeks ago when these demonstrations started, if the Biden administration had made it very clear to international powers that might want to come back the regime in Cuba, that the United States would stand in opposition to that, that wouldn't be a threat today. But because of the silence of the administration, it's a very real threat. So not just strength for the people, not just strength against the regime, but also to the powers around the world, that this is a situation that they may better not come to the regime's aid on.
Yeah, and I want to encourage you to also take a look at the website. And Wes, for those who missed it, you have a brand new blog that's available. If you want more information, a little bit more of a deeper dive into what's happening in Cuba, what it really means, it's on there now.
Yeah, it is. And we talk about the fact that this has not ever happened before in Cuba.
Which is crazy to think about. You don't think about the fact that this has never happened.
It shows how effective the oppression of the regime is.
Yeah.
Is that
because we see protests in the Middle East. We see it everywhere where there are still oppressive regimes.
Uh-huh.
But you don't think about the fact that this has not happened.
Right.
In a country so close.
The people in Cuba have absolutely had enough. The Castros are gone. This is a rare opportunity for them, and they're seizing it. It is also a rare opportunity for the United States of America, and we need to seize it as well. And to Than's point, I was thinking about this earlier today. We need to rally the international community. They need to stop doing trade with the Cuban communist regime. They need to stop it. They need to put pressure on them, too. And I think he's exactly right. I was thinking about this just the other day. If this continues and the United States does not put the world on notice and does not unequivocally support the Cuban people, the next thing you will see happening, because if the Cuban government is about to topple, they will ask for Russian support, and we will have Russian troops 90 miles off the coast of the United States of America if the president doesn't step up and take a stand.
That should be a wake-up.
And a question you had earlier in the show is, you know, can these sanctions do anything since we already do have an embargo? It's not like they're the officials from Cuba are coming
working,
over to the United
working
States.
Together and, well, yeah.
Right, but it brings up what Wes was talking about, that countries in Europe don't have an embargo against the Cuban regime. So there are many ways that the finance industry and things that still have connections to the United States, still have oversight of the United States, can play a role here if these individuals are sanctioned. They may not be able to do as much business or travel or things with Europe, with other places in the world, because we do have a big oversight feature of the finance industry globally.
And we brought up a pretty interesting discussion point in that phone call that came in and said, you know, why are we, of course, no one's fighting against this. There's a huge part of the political American population right now who feels like they're in support of these policies. Well, I think it's important for us to take a look at that idea, which is true, by the way. That's certainly happening in college campuses and around the country right now, and to amplify what it looks like in Cuba, to amplify how the people are responding, not only how the people are responding, the conditions they're living in, the problems that are having. You said, say, the best paying military. These are things that are specific issues that if we can then elevate and showcase what's happening and what happens when you get these kind of politicians in office, and when you freely, not through a revolution, when you freely elect people with these point of views, the blame is going to be on you, not on, you know, the oppressive regime that came to power. It came to power because you decided it sounded nice, because, you know, the general socialism idea, communism idea, I think a lot of people go, in general, that sounds nice, you know, it should be fair. But then when you see the harsh realities of it, it's a little bit different.
It has never worked. It always leads to an elite few, even in a socialist government, an elite wealthy few at the top who control everyone else. And everyone else, what they have in common is misery. It is shared misery. And yet you are right, Logan. There are politicians in the United States Senate and House who want us to be more like Cuba.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, coming up in the next segment, we are going to play a very special episode of our More Than Ever series. It is called Shadows in the Capitol, Defining and Defeating the Deep State. I hope you enjoy it. It's a really well done piece. I mean, enjoy is maybe a wrong word there, but I think you're going to at least be educated, informed, and maybe even entertained a little bit through our amazing video team who put together this, and web team and digital team to put together this new piece. It's available in its entirety on YouTube, so you can find it there. But it is also going to be broadcast in the next segment of the show, so we're going to get to that. We played one yesterday, or day before yesterday, and it went really well. You guys seem to really enjoy it, so I want to showcase this to an even broader audience so you can see the work the ACLJ is doing, not only now, but has done in the past and will continue to do in the future. And it's why this year the ACLJ, we have said, is needed more than ever. And that's why, as part of our team right now, you can join in and you can donate double right now. If you give $10, matched is $20.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Seculo. Our ongoing new web series, More Than Ever, is available right now on morethanever.com. And I want to take you right to it. Our latest episode is called Shadows in the Capitol, Defining and Defeating the Deep State. Take a look at it. Enjoy.
You often hear the term deep state, and people wonder, well, what does the deep state mean? What does that mean? It reminds me of a priest who once said to me, parish councils come and go, but I remain. The elected representatives of the people move along, but there is someone who's always there, and in this case, it's the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C.
The deep state has been a puzzling and difficult to deal with problem, and it's been a problem for the last 30 to 40 years.
I mean, the current fight that we're seeing right now with the deep state and our FOIA practice, our government accountability project, is something that really began back in 2011, 2012.
So one of the largest lawsuits we've ever had is our case against the IRS.
There were some boneheaded decisions.
Bonehead decisions out of mass corruption.
Not even mass corruption, not even a smidgen of corruption.
What created the need for our government accountability project was the IRS cases. When we got one call, and then eight calls, and then 20 calls of groups that were specifically targeted because of their name.
And we knew that there would be more people who may want to add, but we didn't know just how many. And we're now looking at somewhere around 100 different contacts have come in.
I have not done anything wrong. I have not broken any laws.
We want to know why you didn't give tax-exempt status to certain organizations because they had Christian names attached to them, or because they had liberty related to them, or because they didn't follow the liberal leftist line.
Ms. Lerner, why would you say Tea Party cases were very dangerous?
I will not answer any questions or testify about the subject matter of this committee's meeting.
She just testified. She just waived her Fifth Amendment right to privilege. You don't get to tell your side of the story and then not be subjected to cross-examination. That's not the way it works.
Of course, Lois Lerner had to apologize.
They used names like Tea Party or Patriots, and they selected cases simply because the application had those names in the title. That was wrong. The IRS would like to apologize for that.
I say apology not accepted, okay? So we wanted action. An apology was not enough. We wanted the IRS to stop its practices.
A lot of attorneys would probably tell them, you know, just go along with the IRS wants, or stop what you're doing. This isn't worth fighting.
We took on the Internal Revenue Service. That was pretty unheard of. Nobody did a direct challenge to the IRS because of the way they were enforcing laws, regulations, and policy.
Jeff Sessions settles several lawsuits with the Tea Party and other conservative groups targeted by the IRS back in 2010 under then-leader Lois Lerner.
Currently, there are pieces of legislation that want to re-empower the IRS, but it's actually legislation that would protect IRS officials, and it would actually make it legal.
There is a move right now in Congress to undo the very victory we had in court, including the decree, the consent decree, that the IRS executed, and allow these bureaucratic deep state operatives to go after conservative organizations.
The best way to define the deep state is to indicate that it is a permanent bureaucracy within government with its own independent agenda. And it does not necessarily see that it is bound by the rule of law.
They don't do what the elected public wants them to do. They do what in their mind is the thing that is appropriate to do.
And it can actually trample on the constitutional rights of the average American.
Transparency is key to any democracy. If we allow leaders in Washington, D.C. to make decisions behind closed doors, unaccountable to the people, then we are going to get corrupt decisions.
So if you're an elected official, the thing you're often most focused on making sure you continue to be an elected official. Apart from that, your responsibility is to reflect the will of the people that you have been elected to represent.
We started years ago after the victory at with the IRS case, a government accountability project where we have expanded in a great way our FOIA practice. We believe that our government officials should be held accountable.
One of the best protections that we have as the American people is the ability to participate in the government process. And one of the best tools is called the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA. This is a law that says since we are a government of the people, that we have a right to see how our government is functioning.
And so with FOIA requests, you rarely receive the documents that you actually ask for.
So what we do when we see that is we say, fine. You don't want to give it to us, perhaps a judge will give it to us. And the judges have said to those agencies, give up that information, take out the redactions.
Without transparency, we don't have our way of government.
As a former cabinet official, I can tell you when you get these requests from the media, that you have to really look at all of the information that hasn't been released. You have to ask yourself, why hasn't this information been provided to the public? If there's not a good explanation, then you should release it.
One of our current cases is ACLJ versus the National Security Administration. This is the case that involves the waning days of the Obama administration when there was an explosion of what are called unmasking requests. This is when an official, someone who has taken an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States, makes a request to unmask, to reveal the identity of a U.S. citizen.
They were flagrantly violating U.S. law and the protections afforded to U.S. citizens.
We, the public, through organizations like ACLJ, must continue to pressure the U.S. government in order to make sure that we get the background information and that we hold our leaders to account.
I hear all the time from people, like, what can I do? I'm just one person, I'm a single voice, and one of the best ways to make your voice heard is to sign a petition.
The power of Washington, D.C. only works when the rest of us, the rest of Americans, are kept in the dark.
People are being inundated with scandal after scandal. There's so many scandals on Monday, only to be overtaken by scandals on Tuesday. And by the time you reach Wednesday, you forgot about what happened on Monday. And so we at the ACLJ believe people need to be held accountable.
And that's why we need the ACLJ now more than ever. And that is just one of many of the episodes of More Than Ever, which is available now on morethanever.com. Real easy, simple way to do it. You can find it on our YouTube channel as well. If you're on our YouTube channel, make sure you're subscribing, liking, and sharing all of the posts and all of our videos that we put out each and every day. Tell your friends about what we do. That's part of this show. You know, this is a broadcast, obviously, on thousands of radio stations around the country, but also around the world. We are heard worldwide on social media and on our website at ACLJ.org. And that only gets spread if people like you tell your friends about what we're doing here and how they can get involved. So I encourage you, even if you're watching now, you may say, hey, the show's wrapping up. Click share anyway, because this gets into people's feeds. They'll find out about what's going on, the new sanctions coming to Cuban officials, and everything we discussed today. So if you're on Facebook, click that share button. If you're on Twitter, retweet it. If you're on YouTube, hit the thumbs up and the subscribe. And if you're on Instagram, make sure you're following all of our accounts. That's at Jay Sekulo, Jordan Sekulo, Logan Sekulo. I'm on there as well. We have some fun. And I appreciate everyone who listens, everyone who watches each and every day. We're here doing the matching challenge at the ACLJ for the month of July. So if you give a small gift, it doesn't matter. It is doubled at any level. So if you give $20 or someone on the other end saying, I'm going to match that, and make it $40 and effectively double the work that can be done. Thank you again for listening. We'll be back tomorrow on Seculo.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.